An episode giving homage to a cage now gone. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to William Hearn, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Even though my ISP business had completely collapsed on itself, I still had a need to host machines somewhere. I had cow.net, I was hosting textfiles.com on it, and I wasn't comfortable hosting it at work. At one point I thought I might do that, and some complaints came in for textfiles.com, and I realized if this had been at my job, it would have been a whole series of problems to deal with. I knew that even as I was moving out of the artist's colony with my machines, I really could stand to have some new place to host. Time has completely wiped away how I found out about this opportunity. There was a company that was offering hosting at a pretty good deal in the South Boston area, without requiring rack mounting or buying some huge amount of services to go with it. I jumped at the chance, and it's where cow.net and textfiles.com lived for a couple years. This in itself isn't an overly interesting story because many times people have to move where they're hosted or go with a different service or go into a machine room, but the nature of this machine room was just weird enough that I think you'd want to hear about it. The deal was this, and the owner explained to me how it came about. There was fiber being laid down the middle of a street towards a much larger data center for a phone company. The hardest part of laying fiber is getting the permits. It can sometimes take months or years to get everything in order. But if a company is laying fiber, it's actually easy to get them to leaf off one for you. This company had done that, getting themselves on the list of places to get fiber laid into while the road was open and everything was being strung. They looked desperately along this street for any sort of office that they could lease to run the fiber to, and they chose the other half of a Domino's pizza. I'm not kidding. It was the other half of a pizza delivery place and some sort of back storeroom that they were leasing and then making available for computer hosting. The advantage here was that the network was excellent. Even by this time in 1997 and onward, rack mounting was the standard. You had a 19-inch rack, you connected a machine to it, and if the machine was oddly shaped, you put in a 19-inch rack and placed the machine on it. But not in this case. Instead, they built a series of lockers. Actual lockers. Cages, really, with wire mesh walls and a straight-up key going to a master lock that your machine could be connected to. The network was strung by Ethernet cable into each cage, and you could put any amount of machines there to host. I had two, Cash Cow and Beef Cow, one of them running Linux and the other one running FreeBSD. They were weird-looking things. One of them was a dual-processor 486, a terrible beast that most people probably don't know ever existed. Frankly, I am not even sure it existed. What happened is that Ziff Davis, the publishing company, had all sorts of magazines being published out of Boston, and they would get test machines from around the world. One of them had a prototype dual 486. They had kept it in a corner, and now they were selling it for $20. I bought it, and it was pretty nice. The operating system didn't see the two 486s. They were in some way running to act like a much faster 486. Don't ask me how this all happened, but it resulted in a really nice, really fast machine that I installed FreeBSD on and worked beautifully. I had a whole bunch of stickers. It was all sorts of strange slogans. And I covered all of the case with it. This made for one weird-looking box. Next to this monstrosity 486 was a pretty standard pizza box, had a very standard FreeBSD setup, and that was the main textfiles.com machine. Time has also wiped out how much I was paying, but it was something between $100 and $200 a month, giving me access to a shared network connection going out of that building. So imagine that there was some sort of crash happening with my machine and I had to go down and fix it. I had a key card access, so I would drive to a pizza place, walk to the side, open it up, and end up in this bizarre bat cave of 16 cages, and one of them would be my weird machine, which I would then plug the monitor into, see what went wrong, fix it, and restart it, then driving home. And that was how textfiles.com lived for a while. That sort of arrangement, a room full of cages that people could then walk into and do modifications to, it's rapidly disappearing. We're pretty deep into the era of virtual servers, cloud services, cases where you'll never meet the hardware you're connected to. Your machine is at best an idea, and more likely it's a series of ideas, all interconnected and moving around the world without your knowledge or input. It's just a thing in the background. Back then, it was a physical part of your computer experience. You had a machine. That machine was connected to the network. It was a jacked up, turbocharged version of a BBS, a machine that had an identity, one you could decorate or give a host name to, and that was the machine everybody was using. And I still remember what ended everything. It was that textfiles.com, providing just BBS-era text files, quickly became the majority bandwidth for the entire business. Even though we would be talking about 10 or 15K text files, I also made it possible to download the entire site, grab tar.gz and zip files, or even grab all of textfiles.com and take it away. And apparently, this was growing and growing until I was 90% of the bandwidth. They eventually moved me to the backup network. In other words, they had given me my own network, but it was a terrible network. I turned out to be a devil's bargain, a good, dependable renter, but somebody who was using many more of the resources than they had ever planned one tenant to have. But that didn't even drive me out. I used that place happily. It was just something in the background while I went from one part of my job to another, moved from one house to another, and then ultimately had my own home. What killed it was the day that they needed to reach me, that one of the owners was looking to ask me a question, and they didn't have the right phone number on file. It was several houses ago, and we didn't really have much trouble, so I had never updated them about how to reach me. So his solution was to disconnect the machine. That is, literally pull the network cable out and then wait, figuring I would call in and then we could have a conversation. I just want to clearly state, never do this. Never disconnect somebody as a way to get them to call in. It works, but it only works once. The next time we talked after that, I had already ripped all the machines out of my cage, put them on the network connection in my house, and left a searing answering machine message about how to run a business. I don't really have any insight into how much longer that weird little business lasted, since I never talked to them again. But I do know one thing. That era, that way of doing things, that model, that lodging, those roommates on the network, that's pretty much gone. We don't see that anymore. As I said, it could go really south really quickly. But I do miss a little bit of it. There's a certain charm in knowing that there's a machine somewhere with a name that's unique, that lives and people use it, and they don't know the physical traversal that they're taking. That there's a real place, maybe in a basement or an attic, or deep into an office building, underneath some sort of garage, something that lives and breathes as a space that you become part of. Over the episodes, I've mentioned some of the places I've been to, like food lockers, milk factories, artists' colonies, water-filled basements. And it's terrible, but charming. It turns out that I miss that charm, desperately. And I think it's a sign of where I'm going with the online world. Probably after years and years of things becoming more streamlined, more homogeneous, more generalized, I'll be making a move towards the specific, the character-filled, the sharing of online and offline space, making unusual things share space, and involving a human element that we have now spent a couple decades pounding out of existence. I totally get chasing the rainbows of 5-9's uptime and having a variety of decentralized machines doing work for you. But I think for some activities and some projects, it's a little fun to give a little spin to it, a little character, a little part that makes someone smile when they find out what's been going on. Call it old age, call it sentimentality, but I think I lost something special when I angrily walked away from a pizza place that also hosted machines and a caged machine covered with stickers that gave a world a taste of the history of the BBS. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, James Bakoyanu, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who are supporting me and helping me get out of debt. And now, host names of the Cow.net ecosystem. I registered Cow.net in 1995. I still have it. And over the years, I gave all sorts of machines and services weird host names around Cow.net. Here are some of them. The main machine was called beef.cow.net. The server that was used for users to connect to was called cache.cow.net, C-A-C-H-E. There was a dial-in service with modems attached to it, 8 modems, that became known as udder.cow.net. There was a very large file server called O'Leary. I ran an anonymous remailer called haystack.cow.net. You were the needle. And when I moved to a full web server, it was www.cow.net, but the actual hostname was Holy.